Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis
and Benjamin Holden.
Today's episode is great. It's actually such an exciting podcast because we've never done a podcast like this before.
You're very close to mine today, you know.
Am I?
Just angle a little bit close to your face.
What do you mean? I think my thing's a bit dodgy. So
there you go.
Wow, I really did not have the mic under me then, did I?
Yes, indeed.
Why are you hogging the pick and mix?
Why is it so?
I know, but it's so far away from me. I could at least
do what to look at it
to try some.
Okay, well, calm down a sec. But today's episode is going to be released just after the Easter weekend. So if you will listen to this, we're literally what 4 or 5 days away in the UK from gyms being open
in England.
In England, sorry.
Yeah, apologize. I think because I've got a Scottish client who said hers is the end of April, I think.
And apparently Wales, I think, is like a month after us, like the 12th of May.
Really?
Yeah.
And then I think
Northern Ireland's like potentially like 2025 or something like that.
I mean, yeah. But no, England gyms open on the 12th of April, which is obviously super exciting if you are choosing to go back to the gym.
Which means something else super exciting.
Yes. We officially have. We have our Back to the Gym Challenge 2.0 launching. And this will probably be the best challenge ever on the school because of how much hype there is also around gyms opening. And for us, and we had this discussion because we were like, we don't actually want to start it dead on the 12th because that could actually cause quite a lot of pressure to people who feel the need that they have to go back to the gym. Oh, you just turned me down a bit.
So loud.
I'm sorry. Sorry, guys, that was so loud at the start of the podcast. We didn't want to pressurize anyone, to have to go back to the gyms on the 12th. It's completely up to you. And this challenge can be done at home or it can be done at the gym in general. But we didn't think doing it on the 12th was really, it's not really appropriate. Give a bit of time for people to get in the swing of things. And we're going to start the challenge on the 19th of April.
Yes. And you can go in the show notes now, whether you're on Spotify, iTunes, or YouTube, there will be a link for you to hit a notification button. Basically, you can sign up and we will email you the day that enrollment opens so you don't miss it because we are also running an early bird discount for new members.
Yep.
Which will give you 50% off the first 2 days, is it?
First month for the challenge.
No, I mean, you've got 2 days.
Oh, sorry, yeah, you have 2 days.
And then it will be back to normal price. So make sure you take advantage of that. Again, click the link that is below or in the show notes wherever you are listening or watching. So that's cool. Also, YouTube competition.
Are we doing one?
It's currently running.
Oh, are we? Oh, yeah. We did it last week, didn't we?
Wake up, love.
Last week's podcast, though, was a bit traumatic for me in general, so I'm not really with it.
Yeah,
so I wasn't really with it in that podcast.
Basically, this competition that we're running through April is going to be a giveaway. We are giving away some
My Coach School bundle things.
My Protein.
I was going to go into them. So like the bands, sorry, the t-shirts, the bottles, barbell pads, everything like that. My Protein, Gymshark voucher, Strength Shop, lifting straps, belts, things like that.
Ready to go back to the gym?
Ready to go back to the gym. Depending on what you actually would prefer to have. Obviously, we're going to tell the giveaway winner what they want. We're not just going to kit you out with stuff you don't actually want.
Yeah, exactly. And all you have to do to be in with a chance of winning this unbelievable bundle, which is going to be worth a couple hundred quid. So it'll be a nice little...
And also, access, they get 3 months free on the My Coach School app when it launches in June.
Indeed. So, if you want to be in for a chance to win all this, then all you have to do is jump over to the Not So Fickle podcast YouTube channel if you're not watching on there. Obviously, if you are a Spotify or iTunes listener and you're listening on a walk and stuff, great stuff, get your steps up. If you're tuning in at home, you just need to jump over to the YouTube channel. You need to subscribe to the YouTube channel podcast, and you also just need to leave a comment on one of the episodes from April, and we will be choosing the winner from there. Make sure you are doing both subscribed and left a comment.
Yeah, definitely. Preferably leave a comment on one of the most recent ones, because if you go back to the very first, we might miss
you. It's got to be an episode from April.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's an April contest.
Do you know what you mean, March?
March 31st and for April.
Ah, perfect. Okay, yeah. No, that's fine then, guys. And did we want everyone to leave their Instagram handles? Because if so, we can find everybody.
Yeah.
Make sure you leave your Instagram handle on the comment as well. And this is what we did in the last podcast, and it worked really, really well for the giveaway, just so we could actually randomly choose our winner and then also message you on Instagram. So if you could do that for us as well, guys, that would be incredible.
Mm-hmm. I don't think much else has happened this week, which is too exciting to tell you about.
No, it's not. So I think we should actually dive into today's podcast, which actually doesn't have a specific title.
Yes, it does.
Does it?
I've already named it.
What is it called?
I'm telling you.
Do you want to share with the viewers?
Yeah, because they'll have clicked on it already. They know what the bloody title is.
Okay, well, I don't know the title of this podcast yet, but obviously, me and Ben get asked a lot of different questions every single day on socials and on Instagram. You have the ask a question boxes. And Ben had this really good idea that we both will, and also it happens.
Why did you say that? That was probably surprising your voice, by the way. I've had a good idea.
Ben had a really good idea that, and we both put up a question box this morning, and he was like, we should actually answer some of those questions live on the podcast. So we've not picked them out. We're going to scroll through. We're going to choose random ones, and a lot of them will be very, very fitness related in general.
I've actually chose 5 from mine already.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to randomly choose my first one. Okay. I actually did find it before, and this one's super interesting.
Can I just say as well, we haven't had pick a mix on the podcast since
the podcast started.
Series 1. This is now season 3.
Yeah.
Who are these bands by?
Pick Yo Mix.
Is that what the
I got sent
called?
Them the other week, yeah.
It's not a paid promotion. We just got them for free, did we?
Probably. Got gifted them, yeah. And they are great. They have a selection.
What is your favourite pick and mix?
Well, you think mine's really controversial, but it's usually a straw up.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But the ones in that bag, they don't have a straw up, so it was a fried
egg.
Shite.
That's absolutely awful. You know, I'm having a
You're
banana.
Sat there eating a banana. Oh, let's not eat down the microphone, though. No, Ben, don't do that. That's really cruel. Mm-hmm. Everyone block your ears. Anyway.
No, my favourite part of pick and mix is the shit white chocolate.
The chocolate white mice. Oh, Jazzles.
That one.
Razzle Tazzlers.
The really thick ones as well. You know, you get the small discs, which are like, yeah, they're a bit of a peasant version, but then you get like the really girthy ones, which are
for a while. Yeah, they're really nice. So I'm going to dive in with my first question. And it is, how many times, the question doesn't actually make that much sense. How many times to get visible abs I'm cutting? So I think she's obviously saying how long does it take to get visible abs I'm cutting? And I wanted to choose this question because we spoke about it actually quite heavily last week in the podcast in general about the trolling. And what you need to understand, and this question was from a girl, what you need to understand with abs is that everybody has ab muscles, just as people have, you know, biceps, quads, hamstrings. You have the muscle there, and it does depend on your body fat in terms of if you can see it or not. And this pretty much applies all over your body. However, with your abs and your stomach and things like that, for women overall in general, we naturally store more fat than guys. And this is mainly because our body and our anatomy is for reproduction. It's to have kids. I know not everyone wants to have kids. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying anatomically, that's what our body is, and that's why we store more fat. Now, the thing is, a lot of people have this idea of wanting to chase getting abs, and it's very, very heavily to do with your genetics and where you actually store your body fat. So myself, for example, I don't store it on my shoulders. I don't store it on my chest, my upper body, my abs. I store it all on my lower body, my thighs, under my glutes and things like that. So I don't store fat there, so they will show more easily. My sister is the same. I mean, she doesn't have a lot of fat on her in general, but her abs look absolutely nothing like mine. She has a very, very different physique, and it does mean it's very much so to do with your genetics. And it's not just to do with being in a calorie deficit and fat loss and things like that. And even though people say everybody has the opportunity to have abs, I guess, they will always look different. As in, they might not be symmetrical. They might not be what you've seen on a photo or an image or what you're comparing to. And also, you might find that you get so far into a cut that you actually can't go any further. In terms of, if you go further with cutting down your body fat percentage, you can't drop it anymore because it's detrimental to your health. You might have lost your period, for example, if you're a girl. And this purely might just be because of how your abs anatomically look, where your body fat sits, and they're just not as much of a big deal.
I just think they're fucking boring.
Okay.
I just think they're a boring muscle to train, and I think they're just a boring muscle of what they look like as well. Like, I just don't, I don't know why there's so much emphasis on why people really put their self-confidence and how they feel on the way that abs look.
Yeah, we've said that the whole time. You shouldn't want to chase having no body fat on your stomach. And it's so common. It is common for girls to want to do that. That's why I get pissed off. I didn't fucking ask for them. I've had them since I was 5. I'd get less hate if I didn't have them.
I think, I don't know, it's just like one of those things. I don't vibe with the whole, I like having abs sometimes, but it's a very rare times in the year I actually have abs. And most of the time when I do have them, my energy levels are really low, my performance is shit, and they're good for like a couple of photos, and that's about it.
Yeah, but also I'm obviously trying to make the point that I don't starve myself and that I do have them all year round because of my genetics.
Yeah, and that's what most of it's down to genetics with the abdominal muscles. Like, I've got like a very sticky out stomach, so I can see my abs most of the time anyway. But everyone's genetically made up different.
Yeah, I don't think people should try and chase them. I don't think you should ever try and chase them, and doing millions of ab workouts and things like that isn't going to do that for
I
you.
I never do ab workouts. When I have abs in the summer, it's just because I drop body fat, not because I've done any ab workouts.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I run to one of my questions?
Yeah, of course.
So, creatine. This is a really basic question. Creatine, thoughts?
It's great. Oh, you're actually asking me? I thought you were just...
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm asking the question.
Oh, honestly, I think creatine is one of the best supplements. Obviously, it's the most well-researched. There's so much research that's actually gone into creatine. And from personal experience, because I've taken it since I was literally 16, I've kind of got the benefits to back me up in terms of, like, from a personal perspective, how I've actually felt off taking creatine.
I feel like the thing is, like, when most people ask creatine questions, they get quite scared of it. It's like one of those supplements which has got like a bit of a fear factor with. And the thing that people need to get away from is that people almost treat it like it's a steroid.
Yeah, they do. Like, it has like negative.
Yeah, it's got nowhere near as much side effects. And it's got nowhere near as much clout with it either. Like, if you're on gear, you'd know about it.
Yeah.
Creatine. The thing with creatine is, though, creatine doesn't even build muscle. Creatine. What it actually does is it allows you to work at a higher intensity for a longer period of time and recover quicker between sets. So therefore, you can lift higher loads for a longer period of time in order to build more muscle. It doesn't directly build more muscle. It's through the extra energy and the recovery that you'll have during the sessions that you're able to then accumulate more muscle tissue. So you've obviously got to put in the work to be able to then therefore build more tissue.
Yeah, it's just helping your energy systems. And that's actually such a true point. People think when you take creatine, you're instantly... I think this is why a lot of girls always ask me, like, oh, I don't want to just like suddenly look really like massive and like the Hulk. I'm like, you're not going to look like that.
That's like saying, you know what? I don't want to be too rich. You fucking will guess what? You're not going to be, because it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Same with building muscle. You're not going to get massive. I've been training now for... What's it been? It's been like 11, 12 years.
Oh, the pick and mix.
Pick and mix is gone. Pick and mix is gone for a bit. But I've been training now for like 12 years and still like adding tissue very, very slowly now. So it's not going to pile on. Like, and I think the other thing that gets a lot of people nervous is water and water retention. Usually you won't really accumulate too much water unless you do a loading phase. And a loading phase of creatine is generally where people will do like 10 to 20 grams of creatine per day for the first like week to two to be able to get that load in and for the muscles to be saturated. But you can still get the muscles saturated with creatine. Even if you're just hitting 5 grams, it'll just take a little bit longer. And generally after that saturation has happened, you'll usually get like a drop in water afterwards anyway. And as we know, the water from creatine is intramuscular, not on the outside of the tissue. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to make the muscles look fuller and bigger, not that you will look actually watery as well.
Yeah, and then obviously when you first start taking it, there's sometimes like slight fluctuations in weight just because I know you are holding on to more water. So I guess it's just for people to be aware that there are going to be a few bodily changes and like weight fluctuations when you do start taking creatine. But oh my God, I absolutely love it. I think it's a fantastic supplement.
Yeah, the other thing that people usually ask is like, how long can you take it for? Like, I've been running now for like a year. You don't really need to be worried about like discontinuing it and cycling it, although you'll probably see some people do it. They just like to have a little bit of time off creatine. I generally just stay on it year round with creatine, to be honest. And again, the other question that often crops up with creatine is when's the optimal time to consume it? Mm-hmm. Science says that it's post-workout. It's most optimal to take it. I argue that the most optimal time to take it is when you can remember to take it.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I tried to start taking it post-workout, and for the life of me, whoa, what was that?
The viewers won't be
able to hear. God, viewers, oh my God. That was the loudest noise that just came through our headphones. Oh gosh, sorry about that.
True coach.
That was a bit of a surprise to the system. I just take it as soon as I get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's way easier.
Yeah, 100%.
So my next question is, does body recomposition actually work, and do you have to be in maintenance calories? So this is a really good question, because...
Same question to me.
Am I asking you the question?
Yeah, well, I'll ask you my question. That's probably quite a nice start.
So does body recomposition actually work, and do you have to be in maintenance calories?
So yes, body recomposition does work. So body recomposition, what most people refer to when they talk about body recomposition is the loss of fat tissue and the buildup of lean body mass. So in essence, what you need to do to be able to complete your body recomposition is going to be to be in a caloric deficit. So the first answer is no, you don't need to be in maintenance. You'll need to be in a caloric deficit in order to drop body fat levels. And then you will need to have two things realistically when we're looking at accumulating muscle tissue, which is going to be making sure that you're hitting an adequate amount of protein, which is, we try and advise people to hit 1 gram per pound of body weight or slightly above. We know this, a lot of people will argue, well, if everyone was advised on the planet to hit 1 gram of protein, then there'd be no protein left, there'd be no meat products for anyone else. But as we know, the general population is not hitting 1 gram per pound of body weight, so we don't need to worry too much about that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is making sure that our training is progressive. We're progressively overloading training in whatever we choose to do so, i.e. stick to a program that fucking works. They're the three main components, I'd say, of body recomp: is caloric deficit, hit a protein target, progressive overload. Don't make it too complicated. They're the simple kind of foundations of a body recomp.
And that's actually so important there, because I didn't even think in my head then to mention the training element. But of course, like, I know nutrition is absolutely so important with body recomp, but also you're training, you know, you're looking to build muscle and lose fat at the same time. Your actual training and progressively overloading and the program you choose to follow will allow for those results. You know, it's all good and well doing your nutrition and smack banging that, but you also need to find a program that's really suitable to you, that is progressive, that is helping you with your goals, that has hypertrophy and strength work, and isn't just doing HIIT workouts every single day, battering you into the ground.
I think the main thing is that people believe that when you're in a caloric deficit, like, you need to lower the load and up the reps to get toned, quote unquote. And
my eyes. Yeah.
That's the thing, is that you should still be progressing load. You should still be progressing in the intensity or the volume, whatever methodology you choose in progressive overload to be able to scale your training. You shouldn't be going backwards.
Yeah.
So I think they're the fundamentals probably of body recomp. And that's what most people are looking for most of the time, is to build muscle and lose fat tissue because they have better shape. I would argue, though, a probably better way to do it would be to drop the body fat first anyway. Look at what tissue you've probably built and got already, because most people, when they drop body fat, tend to look a little bit bigger and a little bit saucier anyway. So drop that body fat, peel it back first, then you can kind of look at going, okay, now I'm going to reverse diet and start building some tissue. It's often better to do one or the other first. It's like men, we generally can't multitask. It's the same usually with body composition. If you're trying to do two things at once, generally you won't get a good of end result as if you focus on one or the other, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I agree. They were fantastic.
Cool. Okay, my question to you, Lucy Davis Fit, is...
don't full name me.
You don't like when I call you Lucy, do you? We're having a conversation in the kitchen the other day, and then she turned around and went, why'd you call me Lucy? I was like, because that's your fucking name.
No. So that's like me calling you Benjamin. It's like you've done something wrong.
What am I supposed to call you then?
loose.
But you thought I'm adding one syllable on the end of it.
Yeah, but it's like when I've called Carl Callum, he's thinking, what the hell have I done? That is so true. If I say Megan for my sister instead of Meg, she's thinking, holy hell, what have I done? I think if I ever said Deborah for my mum,
she'd slap you because that's not her name. Her name to you and always will be mum.
But you get what I mean. If you full name someone, when you go Lucy, I'm like, what have I done? Instant, what fuck, like, what have I done?
Well, that is your negative connotation.
Oh my God, comment on the YouTube if you think being full named is like being shouted at.
I actually quite like being called Ben. I introduced myself to the podcast. Did I introduce myself as Benjamin then?
No, my coach Ben.
Did I? I'm sure they said Benjamin Halden. I said Benjamin Halden.
Oh.
I actually like my full name.
It is a lovely name. I'm not saying it's not a nice name.
We've had this conversation before actually as well. This is funny. Do you remember what my mum said she's going to be calling me from birth?
I can't remember.
Okay, he was a little red, but he was a little bear and he had a red jumper.
Pooh? What?
My mum was calling me Pooh. What the fuck?
I was thinking of Winnie
about?
The Pooh.
Why would
a little bear in a red jumper.
Why would my mum call me Pooh though?
I don't know. I forgot that bit of the question. I was thinking of the bear in the red jumper. Bear in a red jumper. Barney.
It's a dinosaur. What are you talking about?
Oh, did you see a dinosaur in a red jumper?
No, oh my God. Are you on crack today?
I hope I can hear you. What did you say? What, repeat your question.
What was my mum going to call me when I was younger? I said it was based on a little bear in a red jumper.
Paddington. I don't know. You're going to have to just go next.
Paddington wore a blue coat, didn't he?
I don't know.
Rupert.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember Rupert the Bear? Or was that past your age gap?
I think it was past my age gap.
Imagine if I was called Rupert.
Imagine if you were called Pooh. Winnie. Winnie's a gorgeous name, but Pooh's not.
No, because Winnie is the same. Winnie reminds me of Winnet.
Okay. Well, anyway, my question.
Okay.
What have you got? Well, sorry. That's all from calling me Lucy.
So, can a deficit be too big and present? What? Can a deficit? Okay. Can a deficit be too long and then prevent weight loss?
Yeah. So like the thing with the calorie deficit is, and we always get asked this, like, oh, how long should I be in a calorie deficit? I personally wouldn't recommend my clients to be in a deficit for more than 8 to 12 weeks without some sort of diet break. And there's so many factors because of this. And the thing about what Ben mentioned there, saying, can you stop losing weight? Yes, you can. You can completely hit a plateau because your basal metabolic rate is going to go down. So your metabolic rate is going to decrease as you start to lose weight. Also, things like your NEAT levels, the actual calories burned in a workout, everything starts to reduce if you've been in a calorie deficit for a long period of time because your energy levels are actually so low. You have less glycogen in the muscles. You're overall more fatigued. You fidget less. You move less. Your basal metabolic rate has dropped. Now, people kind of, when they get in this calorie deficit phase, they get stuck. I think this is a really, really common thing where people can be dieting for 8 weeks, for example, in a calorie deficit. They get to the 8 weeks and they might have hit a complete plateau and they think by dropping their calories further and further, say, for example, a woman was already at 1,600 and then she wants to drop more, so she wants to drop to 1,400. That's not the correct thing to do. The correct thing to do is to pop yourself back up at maintenance. This is what I'd personally do. Take yourself out of that calorie deficit, readjust your mindset, readjust yourself psychologically, and then go back onto your 1,600 calories. Because a lot of the time, and we've done a whole podcast on this, talking about why you shouldn't be in a calorie deficit for such a long period of time in terms of your hormones, but also your mental fatigue. You'll start to really, really dislike your food, your training, walking, doing anything. You become very, very cognitively fucked as well from being in a calorie deficit for a long period of time. So I'd always recommend 8 to 12 weeks, pull yourself out, reset yourself. And then if you feel like you want to drop more body fat or drop more weight, go back into that calorie deficit, but don't just keep dropping and dropping and dropping.
Yeah, I'd probably recommend going back and listening to the episode of why you don't always need to be in a calorie deficit, which will probably be quite useful to you. The other thing that I think a lot of people refer to when they're talking about this topic is starvation mode. So this is the general basis of the question, I think, is like, can you be in starvation mode? Like, is it because people believe that in a deficit too long, your body goes into starvation mode?
Doesn't exist.
And it stops burning like food or fuel or something. It doesn't exist. However, what does exist is something called adaptation mode. Mm-hmm. Basically, which is short for adaptative thermogenesis, which again is also known as metabolic adaption. In essence, that's what mm-hmm. it's known as. And the thing that happens with this is that our metabolic rate adapts to try and get used to the caloric intake that we're currently on, the energy that we're intaking for the body. So naturally, what sort of happens is our TDA starts to change. The amount that we're fidgeting, the amount that we're moving, the amount that we're walking, the amount of steps that we're doing will naturally and gradually subconsciously will drop, so not meaningfully. And this is what happens when we just take in less food. Your body wants to move less naturally. It's kind of like when, I think we used this example before, like when you've got a house and you cut the money back a little bit from the mm-hmm. from the heater, from the meter reading. Naturally what happens is the house stops producing as much heat. It's exactly the same with your food intake for your body. If you stop giving it as much fuel, then you will stop moving as much as a byproduct of it. That's why a lot of people tend to find sometimes that when they increase the calories a little bit, sometimes they even drop weight because naturally they'll start moving a little bit yeah. more, so the expenditure is higher as well. So they're sort of the metabolic adaptations that sometimes we have. And also what can sometimes happen off the back of that, if we're in this sort of period for a long period of time, sometimes we will get hormonal changes and we'll sometimes even get metabolic damage. So metabolic damage can lead to disruptions in hunger hormones, lean muscle loss, and in severe cases, even organ damage. Research have documented the occurrence of hair loss, diabetes, and heart failure due to metabolic damage from long-term low-calorie diets. I mean, I'd be a little bit skeptical when we're looking at it that far. I'd say that you're probably going towards there in regards to like people who are like really suffering from malnutrition and hunger, and that's probably long-term. The thing with metabolic damage is as well, though, that it is reversible. Nothing with regards to metabolic damage is permanent. So yeah. by bringing the calories back up, by starting to build a relationship with food, you can pull this back
yourself,
as well.
Yeah, you can pull yourself back out of it. It might just, it's not going to happen overnight, basically, but it definitely can reverse itself.
100%. And that's why I think with the goal of like what to do would be use diet breaks when you need to, kind of period your year up so that you don't kind of be in this caloric deficit for a long period of time. Look at it as like, okay, in this period I'm going to be doing a deficit, this period I'm going to be going to maintenance calories, this period I might do a surplus, try and build some tissue. I have hit my goal. I think that's a thing for a lot of people, is that people may hit the goal from being a caloric deficit and they just never take themselves out of it. So they get mm-hmm. stuck in this trap of just constantly being in a deficit, even though they've hit the body fat percentage that they originally set out to hit.
Yeah. So this is a question I really want to put out there, but also it's not that relevant to you.
It's not, the way.
Even though you're answering it. Mm-hmm. I think you can still give quite a good insight, and it's still fitness related, but it's more mindset related. Best ways to deal, or what I've done to help with my anxiety. You yeah. know one of them, what I've done.
What you've done?
Mm-hmm.
Therapy.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I've not really suffered massively with anxiety. I mean, I've got up some mornings and felt a bit anxious, or I think sometimes I'll feel a little bit of social anxiety, which I think a lot of people will potentially feel when they go back into the world and back into gyms and back into social environments and back into pubs, restaurants, you name it. I think everyone, because we've been tucked away for so long, will experience some kind of social anxiety, because I think anxiety is often accumulated by like a new situation or environment.
Yeah,
I know. And sometimes overthinking.
Yeah, anxiety, there's so many different forms of anxiety, and I literally have the one that's called like worrying anxiety, which is where you don't worry necessarily about things that have happened, you worry about things that haven't happened that you're making up in your head that could be in the future.
I think that was sorry to like really simplify mental disorders, and that's not what I'm trying to do. I saw like a quote which was like looking at that simplification of it, and it was saying that basically anxiety was like people who have anxiety like thinking too far in the future, and depression was like people basically thinking too far into the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the way that you kind of differentiated them.
Yeah, that simplifies it really, really well, because
obviously we can't simplify this much of a complex sort of mental disorder. But
obviously anxiety is where you start to worry quite significantly about things, or you have social anxiety, like you said, just going back out, being around people and traveling and doing things like that. I had to travel down to Birmingham the other week for work, and I had the worst like social anxiety on the train. Like I felt physically sick. But one of the best things, and Ben mentioned it before, that I've personally done with my anxiety is cognitive behavioral therapy. And this is talking therapy, where I have my Zoom calls with my therapist, and she's really, really great. And we go through everything. We have our sessions. We go everything through everything bit by bit. And it's being able to open up to someone who is a complete third party. I think that's important, because I talk to Ben about everything. However, there's some stuff where I just don't want anyone to know about me. I want them to be a completely non-biased person, which is what my therapist is, and that's what a therapist does. Obviously, they get to know you super well, but you get to talk to someone about how you're feeling, which is really important not to bottle things up, because for so long, I would bottle things up, and I personally found that my anxiety did increase massively in this third lockdown. I think this was quite common for a lot of people from what everyone said to us. And I just said to Ben, look, like my OCD has gotten really bad. Like I got diagnosed with that. And I think it's important that I need to just talk to someone now, because I've tried a lot of things in the past for anxiety. Meditation doesn't work for me because my thoughts take over. Breath work isn't the best for me either. I've tried so many different things, like, you know, CBDs and walking and reading, and I love doing all those. They're great, but they don't actually help the root cause for me. And it was all about just finding that right person to talk to, and that's what I did. And
I think the biggest thing is that you spoke about is normalizing therapy. And I think, again, we spoke about this before, and it's something that definitely needs to happen, is for people to feel more relatable and feel like they can go and speak to a therapist, because it's massively helpful. Or just eat a bag of sweets.
Sorry, I just wanted to try one.
It's fine. You don't have to explain yourself.
You've had one.
And you don't have to justify yourself having a sweet.
God, they smell so strong.
But I think normalizing therapy is a massive thing. And the more people who can sort of open up to that tool will be massively helped. I think, again, there's still a bit of a stigma about it. And the more that we can talk about it, I think the better it's going to be, and the more people that will go and get help, even as like a preventative measure, because a lot of the time, I think therapy is looked at as a, almost like, what's the word terminology I'm looking for? Like firefighting, because you get to use like post-trauma or post-addressing a problem. It can be also used as like a preventative measure to put yourself in good mental health and look after yourself long-term.
Yeah, I think the one thing that is quite hard with therapy, and I mentioned this to you, I do actually think it's very pricey. And
I don't think it is pricey in regards to, I don't think that what therapists offer is expensive.
No,
value for money. But for a large portion of the population, maybe it's not doable. Or what often happens a lot of time is that people just prioritize other things. Yeah. I say the same thing about our coaching. It's not expensive. It's just you prioritize different stuff at different part of your life.
Yeah, 100%. That's the most common thing in terms of feedback. As soon as I said on Instagram, they're like, where is it? Like, I find it too expensive to have. And that's 100% what Ben said. It's what you are prioritizing. Some people might go out on a weekend when there's no COVID and spend £300 on drinks. Mm. I don't do that. You know, that is me prioritizing that I rather go and see a therapist. That is so true, actually.
100%.
It's a great perspective, and that's a really, really good way to look at it, because it is priorities. We really prioritize our physical and mental health, so we will do those things to better ourselves in those areas. 100%. Love that.
Indeed. Okay, I've got another question.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting one, actually.
You've got two more, and I've got one more.
Yes. Okay.
That was a lovely sweet.
We have got, okay, number three, pet peeve about the fitness industry.
Okay, so I feel like mine's really basic. My pet peeve is the shite I see from, I'm trying to word this correctly, from people with millions of followers who are not qualified to do so, posting things which is detrimental to other people's health. That I think that's a massive pet peeve of mine because I'm so the opposite.
So basically the video I put on the school last week with the exercises.
Yeah, just really wrong, not just like wrong exercises. There's a lot of exercises out there. I'm talking about ones that you see people doing. You're like, that is actually dangerous. What you're doing, you're going to get a shoulder impingement. I mean, I've at the moment, not from that. You're going to get an injury. Something's going to happen to your knee joints, this and that. And all for people to get these quick, you know, these quick 3-week transformations to pop up. And it just bugs me because I'm just like, if you actually wanted to change people's lives and you really, really want to help people, you'd want to set them on a 12-week plan, a sustainable plan where you can be on that journey with them and you can follow it through and you create a community and you're not just all about the quick cash and quick body transformations and you've popped them on 800 calories and then you fuck them off.
I think that's the thing for most people, though, isn't it? It's just the money earner. And
I think it's really sad.
Yeah. I think the video I put up on the school this week, and I think there's a couple of people asked questions, like, they weren't just exercises, by the way, which are like, these are completely wrong. It was giving alternatives to things like, okay, try this instead because it's a safer way of doing the exercise and you still get the same return from it as well. I often look at exercise in regards to bang for your buck and what you are potentially, how much risk is involved versus how much effort is involved versus how much return you can potentially get from an exercise.
Yeah. And Ben's video was amazing. And one of the exercises he actually put up was a dumbbell curtsy lunge. Now, and this is so true from what he said, from a biomechanical perspective, for your knee joints and for your hip joints, it isn't preferable over just a normal reverse lunge. Not saying completely and never do it again, but if you're going to pick an exercise, pick a dumbbell reverse lunge over a dumbbell curtsy lunge. Like all the other shoulder ones, he said, you don't need to lift your arms in 10 different directions. Just do a lateral raise. It's things that are just better for, you know, injury prevention, longevity, progression, and things like that, rather than just, I guess, like looking a bit different on Instagram.
I think the thing is, and I even looked at another exercise, and I often look at like some of these ones that are put out by influencers sometimes, and there was one called a fucking tray serve. People just are making up exercises.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they don't do it. And we know that the basics of exercise stays the same and it's stood the test of time for years is because it fucking works. But people don't like seeing the boring, consistent shit. They want to go off and do the hop, skip and fucking jump into some exercise because they think it's going to be better for them and fast track to the process. And that's why then people are pumping them out because they're getting the feedback from it, the positive reinforcement and the reward that people are double tapping. So they're putting out more bullshit exercise that are made up. And it's fucking mad because there's no logic to it. Doing the basics with deadlift, squat, bench, whatever, repetitively, people don't want to fucking see it. People want to see this mad shit and people doing somersaults. But that's not what gets results. And most of the people who already look good, who are doing this mad shit, have done it over years of progressive overload doing the basic compound movements.
Yeah. And you know what's actually so interesting? Like, I can openly say my workouts haven't done as well during this lockdown because I post a squat, a lunge, a hip thrust, a bench press, a shoulder press, a lat pull down, and I will continue to post those in their variations for the whole of the lockdown because I'm not going to give you a bullshit exercise. Like, it doesn't bother me that they might not be doing as well as some of these crazy mad exercises because I know I'm staying true to myself. I know I'm not putting out crap.
Yeah. If I ever see anyone doing a fucking tray serve, by the way, I'm going to serve you with a pile of shit straight to your front door because it's annoying to watch. It just does nothing. Absolutely zero.
I don't
zero.
Know what it is, but
yeah, well, you can have a look on the Micro School Instagram page and I'll put it up there this week if anyone wants to see it. I think, do you want what my pet peeve is?
Mm.
Honestly, my number one pet peeve is the zero-sum game.
What?
As in, like, people often view in the fitness industry someone else's gain as their loss.
As in, like, you so can't watch successful people.
Yeah, people see other people do well and people don't like seeing it and they feel like because someone else is moving forward that they're moving back. It's not like that at all. And that's the whole thing of, I think, a lot of time in the fitness industry, because it is obviously a very physical being place, is that people will often compare themselves to other people. And that's not just from, like, a a physical point of view. That's from like a social point of view. That is from a financial point of view. And it's something that we need to be careful of. And I just, that's what I don't like saying, because then that's when you see the negative comments come out. That's when you see the bitchiness come out. That's where you see people falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, everyone will have their time. Everyone will have their time of success if you keep consistent with what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that I don't like most. And I took that quote away from that book that you didn't really like that much. It was the one about the monk. And it was it was something about happiness. I can't remember the name of it now. I can see it over on the shelf.
The one I didn't like was The Courage to be Disliked.
That was it, The Courage to be Disliked.
Yeah, I didn't like the
way. And it was basically about, because it was a conversation two ways with a monk and a boy. And it was looking at human beings, basically, in the way that we see other people and the way that we value ourselves in comparison to other people. And a lot of us often see people, because people got millions of followers, this person's above me, or this person's in front of me, or this person's better than me. And it's not. Everyone is on a level playing field. No one's above. There's no such thing as like this vertical viewpoint that we're looking at people above us. Everyone's on a level playing field. Just sometimes people are a little bit further in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned this before. And at some point you will either catch them up, or you will move further along with your journey, and sometimes they will move further along than yours. We're all on level playing field, just some people a bit further ahead in their journey. And that's the way that we should be viewing things. No one's above us. No one's below us.
Yeah, 100%. That's
the thing I hate, the zero-sum game, where we believe that someone else's win is our loss.
Yeah, 100%. So my final question is to do with Instagram.
Okay.
And it is simply, how to start on Instagram, tips to help organic growth.
Organic growth.
Yeah, so basically buying things and not using engagement groups.
I think Instagram is quite difficult at the moment in regards to organic growth, just because the algorithms are shit.
It's just a very, very saturated market now, the fitness industry.
In regards to growth, though, if you compare like how quickly you can grow from like someone like TikTok compared to Instagram, it's mad. I mean, I don't like TikTok more than Instagram a lot of the time, but if you're just looking for straight growth, you can grow a lot quicker on TikTok. I think you've got to be savvy and use the platform the way that Instagram wants you to use the platform, i.e. use Instagram tools such as Story, ask a question like we're answering the questions to now, use Reels, use IGTVs, use the tools that Instagram basically wants you to use. And that's the only problem with social media platforms. Sometimes it's molding people into certain ways to adhere to their norms, and you can't really be yourself, and sometimes you get pigeonholed into boxes because you can't express the way that you want to be, or the way that you want to feel, the way that you want to create content, because Instagram are pushing out certain, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's that they want to, they're pushing out new features that they want people to use, mm-hmm. which in this instance now is Reels.
Yeah.
For ages we were like, what the hell? Like, Instagram is literally turning into TikTok, because
I'm that's why I struggle, because I like watching and like producing longer forms of content, like YouTube videos, like this podcast. And I think you can get a lot more value from it than someone dancing around like a tit for 10 seconds on TikTok.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do find TikTok quite a difficult platform, but as a creator, you got to use it, you know? Actually, if you're looking at organic growth, you should probably be using all platforms and regurgitating content and using it on all of your platforms together, because some people try and use that excuse like, I don't have enough time. And it's like, we don't have enough time. You do. It's not, you do.
That's, I think it depends who you're talking to. Some people like a full-time
job. No, but I'm just referring to this question.
Okay.
Like, I want to grow. She said, I want to grow on my social media. If you're asking that question, you've set yourself that goal, you have to be prepared. I was a full-time uni student with a job and trying to sort out how to use social media. And sometimes it is completely overwhelming. But you've got to find what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
I found that regurgitating content, so whatever I post on Instagram would then go on Facebook. I could chop it down now and put it on TikTok. I could chop it even further and put the TikTok on the Reel, because people are following different platforms for different reasons, which is really important. But as Ben said, Instagram is a bit of a weird one at the moment. You've got to post what you personally want to post. Like something that Gary Vaynerchuk, so Gary V said, is don't just post things for likes, because you'll end up falling into that trap of actually not following your own ethos. You'll be pushing things and you'll be posting things that you don't actually want to post. You'd just be doing it for likes.
I think the problem with that is as well that you will eventually get found out for being a fraud because you're not being yourself. Mm. And whenever you're not being yourself, you constantly have to live up to that different expectation. And the moment that you let that guard slip is when you'll be found out and then you'll be crucified from it. Mm-hmm. Keep to your own morals, keep to your own foundations, keep pushing your message and keep helping with the message that you want to push out. I'm not saying, by the way, don't use TikTok either, because I actually use TikTok and I actually find it quite funny. I'm just saying be careful what you take from platforms and be careful what you take from creators.
Yeah. And also what's really important is like, don't even focus too much on that number. You got to have 4,000 followers and have a fucking banging business.
I think that's the thing.
And an amazing... Yeah. If you're a PT or whatever it is, you could have 1 million and you could be at the same level as the person with 4,000. Kind of like, don't base your self-worth on that number.
I think it's hard because, I mean, some people don't want to use social media as a way of creating business, or whether they just want to be grow their social media following so maybe they can get endorsement deals or they can work with brands, which is fine. Some people, yeah, like you said, want to use for business. I know some of the most successful people I've met in business have got the smallest followings.
Mm.
So it's not always an accumulation of... I actually know some of the people with millions of followers who don't earn a don't have a pot to piss in because the business model's shit.
Mm-hmm.
So don't always kind of correlate size of people's followings with the book in the bank, so to speak. Yeah. I think that's the best thing. But yeah, with social media, be yourself. Choose someone to pitch to, like, who's your audience, what followers you want to bring to your page, like age, sex, interests, that kind of thing, and it'll help you create the content. And then, like, how do you want to help people? Think about people's problems and the way that you can help them and put out genuine content to help them, not content that you think will get more likes, I think is the main narrative.
I agree. Moving on to the drum roll, please. Final questione.
Yes. Okay, final question. And I think this is a really good question to finish on, and I think a lot of people will be able to resonate with this one. Is it possible to build a nice physique without focusing on nutrition, avoid restriction and binge cycles?
Repeat that again for me. There's like three different questions in
I know,
one.
They've put like kind of slashes in between because it's a multitude of questions, I think. Is it possible to build a nice physique without focusing on nutrition, avoiding restriction and binge cycles?
Of course, yes, you can build a nice physique by not focusing too much heavily on like obsessive. I think the whole point of that question is like, I don't want to track calories. I don't want to be obsessive.
I think that the whole point of the question is to, can you basically build a good physique without food restriction and binge eating is the focus of the question. And I would answer straight away by saying that is the point of health and fitness, to be in a position where you can build a good physique and a good body without being restrictive with food and getting into poor relationships with food.
Yeah, definitely. And we've both been there, you know, at the start of our fitness journeys where we were super restrictive. I was, for one, you know, with being bulimic, it was really difficult. I was very restrictive and I'd binge and purge and things like that in the evening and ended up being all the time. And I got over that through health and fitness and through a community and through educating myself and knowing that I can fuel my body in the correct way. And I didn't track calories for years, probably about 2 years whilst I was coming out of this whole period of like relapsing and through an eating disorder. I didn't track and I was shaping my body. I was building muscle. And this is the thing with tracking calories. Not everyone needs to do it. However, I think that is one thing that is quite hard. So say, for example, if you were wanting to lose fat and people are like, I don't want to track, that's fine. You don't have to at all, but it probably would be a bit harder purely because you don't actually know your calorie consumption.
Yeah.
So you don't actually know if you're in a calorie deficit. And it's not saying you have to track, you don't, but you've just got to understand. You then now need to eyeball all your portions. You need to know kind of roughly what you're consuming.
Yeah, what I would say with that is it makes it a lot more difficult if you don't want to track nutrition.
Mm.
Exactly the same as like with your finance, if you want to grow financially and if you're bankrupt, you need to know what's going in and out. However, is there a way of doing it without doing it? Of course there is. One of the ways that you can do this in regards to if you don't want to track calories and track foods and get too obsessive because maybe you have a history with disordered eating, then one thing that you can do is, okay, maybe write down or think about the foods that you are currently consuming in a day, what you'd normally have if you're having a similar thing every single day, and then just simply pull back a snack or pull back some of the portion sizes. Measure your weight for the week or two and see if weight goes up or down. If your weight starts to go down, you know that you pulled yourself into a calorie deficit and you can stick to that food intake. If your weight doesn't move, okay, you're not quite in a calorie deficit. What else can I pull up my diet? How else can I pull some of the portion sizes back from what I'm currently eating? Okay, I might drop a portion of rice out, or I might drop a breakfast bar out, or a snack out, or a protein bar. Okay, now I've dropped that out, I'm now losing weight, so I'm now in a calorie deficit. Mm. That's one of the ways that you can do it without having to put everything into MyFitnessPal or be tracking numbers, is to just pull foods away from what you're currently having.
Yeah, and also obviously eating intuitively, only eat when you're actually hungry, which can take a few people. I think it actually takes a couple of weeks to even find that, because I always love to eat food.
I think the only issue with that is that people aren't really hungry. A lot of the time they're just bored. And
yeah,
They'll just eat anyway, and they'll go massively over calories. So intuitive eating is difficult sometimes, and I haven't got enough experience with that to be able to comment on the best way to do that with intuitive eating.
Yeah, I know it is a good option though for some people who are trying to not track and not be obsessive, is just eating when you are actually hungry. But you're right, it's very difficult to kind of understand if you're hungry, if you're bored, or if you're craving something. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? You can do whatever you want to do. You can do these things. You can not track. You just kind of got to know your own boundaries and know how you're going to feel. There's nothing wrong with either of them.
Tracking. One thing I would say is that you shouldn't be tracking, or you shouldn't be in a calorie deficit if you've currently got an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be focusing on not the composition so much. You want to be focused on how you can get those relationships with food better and securing those foundations first before you then go into looking at goals like that.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Think
the other thing is, and this again is down to us as coaches and the fitness industry in general. This kind of behavior, we almost normalize eating behaviors and with bodybuilding competitions and physique competitions and malnutrition and idolize it. And the normalization of the fitness industry is like zero calorie everything. Which, by the way, I do actually enjoy in moderation. But I also enjoy a sandwich every now and again.
Oh, I love a sandwich.
And I don't just mean like a fucking crustless, butter-free, zero-sauced filled patty of emptiness, which just doesn't satisfy anyone and just causes more wind passing than a litre of beans. I'm talking about a proper sandwich.
Could suppress your bean consumption.
But we've got to do stuff in moderation. You can't be having zero-cal fucking everything and expect not to be satisfied by meals sometimes.
It would make you very ill.
Yeah, and the other thing we can't do is you can't be punishing yourself all the time for having a bit of extra food sometimes or overeating sometimes, because we all do it. The worst thing that you can do is punish yourself for it, because as we all know, punishment doesn't work and it creates these really vicious cycles. So try not to get, I know it's difficult to when you're in that state, but try your best to almost forgive yourself and forget, because it's going to be a lot healthier for your future relationships with food. And I think I've been over this stat before with in regards to normal people who go into dieting and normal dieting who go into, then I think it was 35% of those then go into pathological dieters, and then 20 to 25% of those then go into disordered eating. So we know it can be a slippery slope sometimes when people get into the fitness industry and start dieting. Just something to be aware of.
Yeah, definitely. So I can't believe we've just gone through 10 questions. That was so great.
Do you know what I was going to say? Sorry, just on the whole binge culture thing. And this is where I think personally, when we're talking about like social media and how it influences people with their eating habits, I think TikTok's the worst of that.
TikTok is so the worst. The kids are like 13.
And they're advising people.
Advising people. You're 13.
There's a woman advising people on thyroid issues the other day, and she didn't have a fucking clue.
Yeah, like, TikTok is, there's no regulation. Issue,
go and see a fucking doctor, not some arsehole on TikTok.
Yeah. No, and I agree with that. The culture on there is poor.
And they push really poor narratives, and it's by kids who don't have a clue or any kind of qualifications to be able to be advising people on nutrition. And that's the dangerous thing about TikTok and what people take away from it. And it is really difficult. So you just got to be careful where you're getting your nutritional advice from, mm-hmm. and making sure, again, you're consuming the right content from the right creators or the right people with the right qualifications.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really, really important point. If you do take something away from this episode, it's be careful what you consume and where you consume it as well, obviously. Mm. And as Ben mentioned at the start, please don't forget that we do have our competition running for YouTube. So if anyone has just been listening on a walk, why are you doing that? If anyone who is, could stop it for a sec. If anyone is listening who's now like walking or something like that, give a little pause, head over to the Not So Fit Couple YouTube channel, and then you can like the video, drop a little review in the comments, leave your Instagram name for us as well.
You must be subscribed as well.
You must be subscribed as well. And then you'll be in with a chance of winning our giveaway.
Indeed. And also, I can't remember what the date this comes out, but it won't be long until the enrollment opens for the Back to the Gym Challenge again. Mm-hmm. So make sure if you want to be notified as soon as that opens, to be notified about the early bird discount, which is going to be 50% off, that you click one of the links either on the YouTube channel or in the Spotify or iTunes notes, which will take you to the email notification list. Always, always make sure that you are, if you're out on your walks or strolls or watching this on YouTube, screenshot it. Smash it onto your Instagram stories. Give me and Lucy a tag and the Micah School a tag, and we'll always try and get back to you because we do really, really, really appreciate all your support. And I think we appreciate your support even more over the last couple of weeks, especially what we talked about in last week's podcast. And Lucy opened up on some socials about it. It's nice to obviously have that really positive group of listeners around as we tune into our content as well.
Yeah, it never ever goes unappreciated, and we're very, very thankful to all of you. So have a wonderful...
Ooh, we're going to talk about the... Well, I'm not going to mention his name, but we've got a special guest coming up on the podcast. I think it's either next week or the week after. I've got a bit of a bro crush as well on this one, so it'll be quite an interesting episode. He's one of like the OGs of the fitness industry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know him at all, so it'll be interesting for me.
Yeah,
but it'll be good.
It'll be a cool podcast, and I'm looking forward to bashing this one out. So again, that'll be up in the next week or two. But as always, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, and have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are in the world.
Bye, guys. Bye, guys.